Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Assassin's Creed, your number one podcast for all things Assassin's Creed.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 162 of Let's Talk Assassin's Creed. We're going to be talking about, well, Declan, why don't you describe the topic that we're going to be talking about, and then we'll introduce our guests.
So it's a strange topic, but Assassin's Creed is always fascinating with the idea of, should the future be cyberpunk, you know, with sci-fi hidden blades, or could it be a bit more far-fetched with wastelands like Horizon Zero Dawn or Mad Max? And I find it more interested, instead of talking about the proverbial future, what if we talk about what might be more law compliant and what would best fit the franchise? A cyberpunk dystopian future where Templars take control, or a more Toba catastrophe ridden apocalypse? And the best people to talk about law compliance is Marco and Sari from Access the Animus.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello and welcome back to the show. You were on our show a long time ago, episode 140, that was it, 140. And we basically just had a long chat about the history of Access the Animus.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your whole group's, you know, enjoyment of these games and all the work you've done over the years. And that was a great conversation. And it's very nice to have you. Before we get into the possible future, possible ending of this universe, let's get your thoughts and your updates on some of the recent UB Forward news, because we're recording this, 10-12 days after Ubisoft Forward, and there is a lot of Assassin's Creed stuff going on. But I don't really want to ask about Mirage, because we've talked about Mirage on the show. You've done many videos already on the gameplay trailer and the story trailer. And I've got to say, I really liked most of what I saw. I'm looking forward to the game. But I'd love to hear both of your opinions on Jade, the mobile game set in China, and on Nexus, the VR game covering three characters. Why don't we do Jade first, just for the sake of it? What are your thoughts on Jade? Did you like what you saw? Are you interested?
I am very very much into Jade. I'm very excited about that. Not only because it's set in China and it does feel like a mainline game, even if it's for mobile, but the environments, they do look pretty nice. For it being a mobile game.
Yeah.
It does feel, for the few frames we've seen of gameplay, it does feel like Odyssey, even visually, in terms of, you know, magical attacks and stuff, the magical effects in gameplay, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
But still, I'm so
pumped. Yeah, but it does fit a mobile environment.
Yeah, it does. It does feel a little bit more the like, you know, a kind of, you know, free to play mobile game, especially if you think that it's mainly oriented, or like originally oriented towards a Chinese market or an Asian market. And in general, it does feel like the interviews are talking about like a huge open world experience. So it's not even like a tiny, it doesn't feel like it's going to be like a tiny and short game. Like it feels like it's going to be, you know, I'm expecting it to be like similar to like Odyssey on mobile game, but set in China.
Yeah.
And
I've signed up for is it the public beta, I think they call it, or the public test?
Yes.
And, so definitely I was not that bothered. I'm going to be honest. I've said before, I don't game on my phone. And then I'm so stupid. I had a thought. My wife has an iPad. Maybe I can borrow her iPad and actually play it on a reason. Because I can't imagine playing Jade on a little phone screen is going to be very satisfying. Maybe it is. Maybe they know what they're doing. But the thought of playing it on an iPad screen is more appealing. So, hey, if I get a chance to play it in the beta, I will definitely do that. Have you signed up, you three, Declan, Sari, Marco? Have you signed up to maybe play it when it goes into beta?
Well, no, I didn't, because Marco
did though. So, we are pretty much the same person.
And I'm not really into mobile games either. Gotcha. I don't have very much time to play on mobile.
Mm.
And then, I don't know, it's not my my type of games. I do not play on mobile, so but I will play on mobile for streaming. So I will play it for our streams.
I wonder if you had to pair up a controller with it. That would be interesting. Sorry, yeah. Sarah.
No. The only thing I'm curious about the game is how they will deliver on parkour, because I mean on mobile, I don't know how it will feel on mobile to parkour up and down the.
They did say it's going to be obviously optimized for hand controls on a mobile phone. And if I recall correctly, there was already a mobile game called Assassin's Creed Identity for iOS and Android as well, where you moved around open world environments, limited, but still in Renaissance Italy. You could also, climb the Colosseum and stuff with your sort of like customized assassin, like you could customize the outfits and stuff. So there was like you tapped the screen and then you moved with your finger upwards so that your character could go forward, and then if there was a wall it would automatically climb and stuff like that. So maybe it's going to be the same.
Okay. Yeah, it would be a bit strange to like shake the phone to do like a side eject or something, wouldn't it? drop the phone and you do a back eject off the guy. But yeah. Sorry, Declan, mate. Over to you.
I was going to say, I have signed up for the beta just because I want to pick it apart, because I'm a big mobile gamer. I've been gaming on my phone for like 5 years now. I've been playing one game for 2 years straight, so I do believe there is huge potential, because the market for it is only dominated by the Metroverse games, which is like the Honoko games and Genshin Impact, and the new Tower of Fantasy. So there's a lot of realms. On about the controller support, not trying to play console wars or anything, but there's a higher percentage of Xbox controllers working over PlayStation controllers, because over the years, I have tested that PlayStation controllers work on about 80% of Android games, even if they're not completely supported, whereas Xbox does work about 85-90% more games. Even if they're not supported, you can actually use them, even if you want to navigate your mobile home screen. So if they don't have data controls, it might be odd, because Division Mobile 1 does, but you could still theoretically use a controller. It would be possible, but the game will fail if Ubisoft doesn't think about a PC optimization, especially since Google Play has a localized storefront for PC now. Mm-hmm. And Level Infinity has just released Undawn, which is the new open world zombie RPG that has a PC optimization at launch as well. Diablo 4 launched with PC optimization beta, and that proved a big success. Genshin Impact and the Honoko games, Tower Fantasy, are also PC optimized. So if Jade doesn't have a PC optimization in the works, it will eventually probably flop in the West, because mobile phones in the West are not usually very good at handling open world RPGs, since it's probably going to be about 16 gigabytes in size, because that's how big Genshin is on a mobile. And with most screens being about 6 inches, the UI is always cluttered.
Yeah.
So I'm very nerdy about the mobile market. I will apologize.
That's all right. It's interesting to listen to. I mean, I don't play games on mobile, so I've got no concept of what's popular. But I guess because it's going to be on the Google platform, it won't take long for someone to figure out how to run it on PC.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that'll be the best way to experience it.
There is legal software. It's legal. People who play Magic the Gathering Puzzle Quest use it, and the developers are all right with it, but it's a bit on the nose. But there is an emulator called BlueStacks.
Yes, I've heard of that one. Yeah.
It works fine. It's really good. It is legal, but apparently I have heard on the forums for Octo, which do Magic the Gathering Puzzle Quest, that apparently developers are not always find people using emulators as good. Apparently they don't like it. So would Level Infinity and Ubisoft be a bit annoyed if people used BlueStacks and streamed it on PC through BlueStacks, because they could legally challenge it, because it is an emulation. It's not a legal software. It's not, you're not legal.
Emulation is legal, at least in Western jurisdictions. It? Yeah, yeah.
That's, so they couldn't really do anything. They'd probably just be annoyed.
Not really. I mean, I guess they could ban your Ubisoft account if they really wanted to, but...
They'd probably just be irritated.
Maybe.
Because I think, in my opinion, the irritation will come from that the games that are optimized for PC, the storefront is more developed into the company's back pocket, but when you're emulating, it's probably a little bit more wiggle room, because I think some storefronts are shut down through BlueStacks.
Right.
Gotcha. That I can't remember. Whereas if they did it for Ubi Connect, they could do a lot of deals. Just saying.
Yeah.
get those Ubi points in, the Ubi people. Play Mirage on Ubi Connect. Log into Jade and get Basim skin or Basim hair.
You know it's going to happen. I want to also ask then about Nexus, a VR game, which had been kind of rumored and leaked for a while, but not one, but three characters that we can play new stories as, which I've got to say, I don't have a VR headset. I won't buy one. Unfortunately, I can't afford it just for one game. But the thought of playing a new Ezio story, a new Connor story, and then a new Cassandra story is very appealing. Just a shame that you need a headset to do it. What do you think about that, Marco and Sari?
I love it. I really love it. I had the chance to try how was it called? The one that escaped the pyramid.
The Last Pyramid.
Yeah. Ubisoft invited us in Dusseldorf some years ago to try it. It was like a VR game about Assassin's Creed Origins. I mean, it was not Assassin's Creed Origins.
It was loosely inspired, but it wasn't canon.
Yeah.
So. Gotcha.
But it was so fun. So I'm really excited about Nexus. We don't have a VR platform.
We might think of.
Yeah, we'll see.
It'd be nice to stream it, though it's going to be very expensive. So we are still
considering the hypothesis. Yeah, I love it.
To me, I am sold more on the idea of playing as Connor, because it's been a long time since we had any gameplay about Connor. Other than, I'm not even sure, like, did Rebellion eventually add Connor? Because it did have Arno, but...
You mean Connor Kenway?
No, only Connor.
Well, I wasn't even going to mention that. I mean,
Well, the official website for Nexus...
Yeah, it mentions that.
Yeah, calls him Connor Kenway. So
it doesn't...
So
it does.
The story profile for the website for Nexus has three pages dedicated to the stories of the three main characters of the game and for Connor. Yes, so it does have that. So I guess that Connor's story is not canon in the game. Sorry, I guess that's what's going to be. But it's interesting, imagining. I can also imagine one of the selling points could for hardcore fans is you can actually you flick your wrist and within the game you can actually see the hidden blade.
Can you imagine how many times I will flick my wrist and throw the controller?
Try not.
It's gonna be with the old Nintendo Wii and the nunchucks, that people
pretty much
television screens and breaking their televisions. It's gonna be that way again, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting, and also for hardcore fans, it will also have a little bit of modern day story.
Yeah.
So.
Oh.
That as well.
Well, we don't know how it will be. Portrayed, but I mean, there is a wrapping.
There's a modern day wrapping. As far as I know, it's we are going undercover for the assassins, but we are working for Abstergo and trying to understand. Sorry,
it sounds great.
And I think there are some artifacts to find, usual classic standard Assassin's Creed story, because this is a new medium, so. I think you're going very classic with the wrapping, with the modern day wrapping to the story.
Understood. Understood. I look forward to seeing some YouTube playthroughs anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be amazing.
sure. Well, Declan, I just wanted to get, you know, people's feelings on the new announcements. Do you want to kick us off on the main topic?
Can do. I'm just now thinking, while everyone's running around with VR headsets, I'll just go out to the park, put a hood on, ruler up my sleeve, and there's my assassin fantasy. Don't need VR. I've got real world trees and playground slides.
don't kill anyone, please, because that's not good. Yeah.
I have a ruler. Most thing I'm going to do is get a splinter. I mean, the best topic to start off with is, we know in the franchise and in the modern day, Abstergo are Templars. They're crazy, they're rich, they can build practically anything. So is the idea of a dystopian cyberpunk future where the Templars run control for technology actually very plausible? I think that is probably my biggest question. The whole idea of like futuristic hidden blades and probably using Apple of Eden cameras or something... Is that more realistic for the franchise to go with, if that makes sense?
It's a nice question. I can see that a story like that could mirror, in a way, the aftermath of what we already know, like the Toba catastrophe is this main story event for the Assassin's Creed lore, which, you know, crumbled the first civilization society. So if we actually had like a post-catastrophe kind of or environment or situation where the Templars have taken control and now they are controlling the world. So it's still like a post-apocalyptic environment. I think we do have some elements already, like in the known lore, so we can have assumptions or about where a story like that could go. Like there could be elements for fans that already know what happened to the society after the Toba catastrophe happened. It's going to be interesting. It's a nice topic to have an episode of Let's Talk Assassin's Creed around.
I think personally, it's kind of a topic that I've been thinking, because when the Visions comic released, there was a lot of artwork for futuristic assassins, and I have seen pictures of fan art of assassins using, well, lightsaber hit type hidden blades. And it got me thinking that whole cyberpunk dystopian future is one that is very idolized in sci-fi technology, idolized in sci-fi movies. Assassin's Creed at its core is a sci-fi game. So would it be more realistic to have that dystopian future where it's technology everywhere? You know, you're not an assassin dodging cars and traffic, but you're dodging high-tech security, drones, you know, like Watchdog Legion type approach, but more ingrained in the Assassin's Creed universe, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting. I think there's a good chunk of the fan base who has been already asking for like a futuristic Assassin's Creed. So, that's a topic that I think, one way or another, people at Ubisoft or people that work with Ubisoft have already thought about or like tried to play around with, like a something like what you described in a way, like you said, it was part of one of the stories that were meant for the Assassin's Creed Visionaries graphic novel. So there was one of the stories where it was called Assassin's Creed No Tomorrow. And it meant to have like these, this last remaining assassin doing her stuff to try and stop the Templars who are now controlling the world. And it's interesting to consider the idea of now you are alone against an entire world of technology that is trying to stop you. So are you alone, like a main character, the main character of the Matrix, trying to go against the entire, fleet of machines.
Yeah, I think in the economy of the franchise, it would make much more sense to have like a futuristic environment, not a like Horizon Zero Dawn one.
Mm.
Because, I mean, everything is pointing towards the Templars winning. The Templars are more powerful than the Assassins, at least until now. So
yeah.
I don't know what will happen with Basim coming into play, but for now the Assassins are losing, so it's true that Templars are stronger, richer, they are into the higher spheres of command and government and stuff like that, so it's easier to picture a future shaped by this class, if you want to call it like that, so a rich class in the government, etc. I would picture more a futuristic future than a post-apocalyptic one. Of course, if Assassin were winning and Chaos would
can you hear
permeate the world, of course, we would have a post-apocalyptic scene.
Can you hear the ironic tones of a Templar supporting Lady talking?
Yeah.
We could have a whole separate discussion on whether assassins represent chaos or not.
Yes.
Declan.
Yes.
So let's save that for another time. They really don't. Anyway, damn it. I was going to say something. I tell you one thing that this conversation has made me think, like you said there, Sari, you know, the way that although the modern day story has been at times inconsistent and there are some gaps, Abstergo have so many advantages, it almost feels like the writers have boxed themselves into they've put themselves into a box where there's actually no realistic chance that a few distributed cells of scrappy underdog assassins have got any chance of, you know, protecting humanity. I do wonder if there's a good opportunity for a game where maybe the assassins win, just for one game, just to restore a bit of balance to the modern day story.
And then at the end, you find out it was just a calculation by
this. Oh, come on, man. yeah, that would probably happen. Go on, Declan, mate. You've got your hand up.
Yeah, I think that the only way it couldn't be a futuristic kind of, you know, ending to the franchise, if a new catastrophe actually happened and it wasn't stopped by the assassins as it happened.
Yeah, but who would be there to be assassins or Templars? I mean, it would be just another concept for another game. I mean,
yeah, maybe, or it could be like if an actual catastrophe hit the Earth, maybe some assassins or some Templars might realize in time to go in some of the vaults and save themselves, and then there's like a wasteland of around the entire world, and there might be, you know, a new clash about who is going to try and set the new direction for what remains in the world.
Yeah,
but again, how many would survive?
Who knows?
I mean, it would not be a lot. I don't know, 10 people against other 10 people.
That would be really cheap for a game. You don't have to have social stealth.
Oh my god, it'd be like a campfire simulator, like a
survival exactly, game. Pretty much, you know. Exactly.
What you said there reminds me of the cutscene, or the vision, if you like, that Juno presents to Desmond at the end of AC3. You know, what will happen to society if you don't do the right thing, quote unquote right thing. I always found that vision, that little scene, so deeply disturbing. You know, of how someone's words and good intentions can be corrupted and misused. I always remember that ending really kind of making me feel uncomfortable.
it's interesting because like this, that is also part of the themes of Assassin's Creed 3, of things happening in cycle. Like Juno at the end of that cutscene says something like, and so you see that what was, what once was shall be again, something like that. So it's all in the theme of, you know, recurring events in history, like, you know, the catastrophes happening over and over again. There's like when you, before you get to the end of the, like the final room in the Grand Temple, there, like the key is a Ouroboros design of this snake that goes on and on. Like AC3 has this subtlety, like subtle elements about that. And so that vision too is about, you're trying to set a new direction, but eventually your words will be misinterpreted, and it still will happen as it is, or as it is planned. Very disturbing, but also super interesting when you put it in the
very deep.
Yes,
absolutely. I need to replay AC3. I've only played it once, and I remember really enjoying the story and the modern day, and I enjoyed the historical part of the game, and I really need to replay it and properly absorb it, you know. Anyway, sorry, Declan, you've had your hand up for ages. Go ahead, mate.
Oh, it's all right. I quite enjoy listening to all this. I think the only thing that fascinates me, because I've had this topic with a few friends before, is when you always discuss about a dystopian future where the rich basically have enough money to buy technology, it's always Templars or Assassins. But what if the future of technology would never be Templars or Assassins? What if it would be Isu? Because we know in lore there is a sect of, I don't know if the Templars and Assassins United called, I had the name on the tip of my tongue.
The Instruments of the First Will.
That's the one. There could be a possibility that over time, after the failing of Resurrection Juno, that they could have amassed an army, a collection of sages who've looked at their memories and thought, you know what, I want to be like that again. You know, instead of rejecting the memories or going and saying they've accepted and want to be like that. I've always thought there could be a possibility that Basim and Fear or whoever could help Instruments of the First World to take control, leading to the point of a future where the whole world's ruled by technology is not Templars or Assassins, it's the Isu. So the cycle begins again of another Isu reign. And it will then ask the whole problem, if the Isu reign again, will the Isu fight again, forgetting everything they once learned?
That's pretty interesting as well. Because like you said, we do have elements of that in the story already. If I am not mistaken, the Assassin's Creed Uprising sort of like implies that at the end, all the instruments of the First Will are gathered there, like in that final environment. I think it was somewhere in Australia or something like that. And they imply that after Juno is defeated, that also the instruments of the First Will are defeated, but they were presented as a worldwide organization. So in that regard, they couldn't fit, like they couldn't all be in the same warehouse that exploded, like the entirety of the organization. So it could be nice to, you know, to have them appear again. Also because the Aita sages are still, you know, recurring elements throughout the human genome, while the, you know, the Aesir or Asgardian sages or Reborn Isu, because they shouldn't be called sages. I had a few comments recently after we released the video on the story about Basim.
Explain that point again.
Yes. So basically, there is a small difference in calling sages and whatnot. So basically, the reincarnations of the Isu produce the reincarnation of the Isu Aita, that was Juno's husband. Those are called sages.
Yes.
basically, this is described in a letter in King Alfred of Wessex's study that you get at the end of Valhalla. And it says something like, there are recurring reincarnation, they are called sages. Then there are other ones, there are only reborn ones. And those are the Aesir or Asgardian reincarnations. I think the wiki has adopted the name Reborn Isu in order to differentiate them from sages. Gotcha. In some of the videos that we have done that I wrote, I just went for sages because it's more commonly known name. So when you say sages, you immediately recognize that that's a reincarnation of an Isu. But
yeah,
I had a few comments say, it shouldn't be like that.
I love that kind of depth of debate, though, about what word we're going to use to describe this group and this group. Because, yes, there are some differences. That's true.
And so in that regard, having the Aita sages being reborn over and over again, because those were not stopped, like the sages for Aita will continue to emerge amidst the humans within AC. So now imagine new Aita sages being reborn and finding out that Juno is already dead and their purpose in life is gone. So they can either, you know, end their lives or they can try and start something different. Because there was in AC4, there was like that, the manifesto of the instruments of the first will. It was like this 30 documents, like 30.
Post-its.
There were post-its that you could find across Abstergo Entertainment. And once you scan them, they describe the manifesto that was written by John Standish, John from IT, who was a sage. Mm-hmm. And he envisioned a society where the Isu would come back and would come back to have to be in control of society again. And then, you know, humans would go back to be their controlled pets, basically. So
yeah, but I would see it very difficult to have a whole Isu society back at the top. How would you do that? I mean, okay, you have a lot of Aita sages reborn, they're all Aitas, so
I will give you a solution through the blood vials that disappeared from the observatory at the end of AC4. Mm-hmm. And those blood vials all had, you know, blood from Isu people or...
Oh, were them from Isu people?
I think. They might have been. No, I'm not sure. Maybe.
Because what I remember is that... Maybe I remember wrong, but what I remember is that the sages have the triple helix DNA.
Yes, sure.
Okay. So from there, the little pieces of triple helix, you could try and
create new Isu. That's what they were trying to do with the Phoenix Project.
But you need Templars because they have the technologies.
Yes.
So
that'd be interesting. It was kind of like explored already in Assassin's Creed Uprising. Like the Templars are doing this thing. Are they working to recreate the Isu or just to study them? That's interesting. Like an entire society could be.
You've mentioned, I think Declan mentioned it at the start, and then you've mentioned it there. So two different comics, Uprising and was it Visionaries?
Yes, Visionaries. Like Visionaries was the graphic novel that was meant to happen, but it wasn't funded on
Kickstarter. Oh, gotcha. Because I couldn't remember Visionaries. I haven't read most of the comics, but that was a name I hadn't heard of, and I was going to ask for a quick story summary. But okay, it didn't actually go to print in the end.
Yeah, they did mention that they would try and find different ways than Kickstarter to try and bring that back. In some way or form, but they still haven't gone public about that.
Gotcha.
And instead, Uprising, basically, it was like the set of comics that provided the ending to the Phoenix Project story. So that's where Juno ended instead of within the games.
I need to find and copy and read those, because I would like to actually read the conclusion to that storyline. And I'm sure I could find maybe you have a video about it, but I'm sure I could find a video explainer. But there's nothing that quite beats experiencing it yourself.
Yeah.
And I would like to read that one, because, you know, it was a multi-game plot line. And
yeah, pretty much, yes.
You don't get the payoff. So, yeah, I need to find that one and read it.
Yeah, it might be complicated to find the paperback version. If I recall correctly, even that comic had a troubled development in that the final issues, they weren't printed, but they were only made digital. And then they had like a collection, like three collections for the three main arcs of the comic. But the single issues, I think that like issue 8 to 12 or something like that, they weren't made available physically. So it did feel like that comic too, like in itself, wasn't super successful. So not a lot of people saw how Juno died in the comics.
Yeah.
And maybe that's for the best.
Yeah, indeed. You did, when you said there, Sari, about Sages having the triple helix DNA, it did make me think of, you know, how many Sages have had these visions, had these nightmares. They've gone to their doctor. The doctor said, okay, we're going to run a blood test. when the lab technician does the blood test and says, doctor, there's something really strange going on here. But it's that mundane stuff, isn't it? Which I know is not very exciting for a video game or a novel.
Oh, that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, you know. Actually, the biggest part of blood tests do not check DNA. So
that's true. Yeah.
So
good point.
Only Abstergo does.
Only Abstergo does. Not only we do that.
Look at her.
I see how you've really adopted the identity there. You know,
absolutely.
I'm going to take a little segue here, because as Declan said, you know, a recent series of video games that deals with post-apocalyptic storylines is Horizon. Yes. Marco, you're a fan of the Horizon games. Have you finished Forbidden West?
Sadly, no. There's like playing it a little bit consistently before the gameplay trailer for Mirage at the PlayStation Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And then that happened, which meant a little bit more time of my already limited free time.
Yeah.
All of that was dedicated to creating content on ATA.
Yes.
So I had to stop for a bit. I plan on getting back on that too, because as I started playing more of the main story, Sari also sat there and watched the story as well. So I always enjoy playing games with Sari. But she doesn't when I get lost inside stuff, inside content. So it's always balancing. Like when Sari's not around, then I do sit to play through all the side stuff, and then when she's there.
The relationship there between you two is I the other gamer in this house is my oldest daughter, and she always laughs at me when I'm playing a game.
Oh, nice. She'll say,
"Dad, are you doing side content again?" Yes. Why don't you get over the main story? Well, I want to explore this building, or actually there's an NPC I want to talk to, or I've gone off on a side quest to upgrade some gear or whatever it is. So she's very much a main story, beginning, middle and end, get the job done, you know, move on. Whereas I am more like you, Marco, you know, you want to see everything.
Oh, it's not like I dislike the side story. It's just that when you...
Too late for that now. We know.
It's just like when you are not the one playing and you just follow someone else playing, it's a bit boring because you get lost, you just lose the track of the main story, the side quest. I get lost in...
Who's who in the characters.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, when I watch him playing, I just prefer when he goes
through the
main story. Yeah. But when I play, I actually explore everything around me. When a new game comes out and we both play it, I'm usually the explorer, and he is usually the...
I go through the main a little bit of the main story and a little bit of the side, especially when we're playing AC.
Not only, if you remember when we played Zelda.
Yeah, that was also the
I
same.
Was like climbing all the mountains I could see because I had to see what wasn't on the top of them. But so
yeah, and I wanted to go through the story. That's yeah. true. That is true.
Well, in that case, we can't talk about Horizon because you haven't finished it, so no spoilers. Although I will say, I haven't. I have the DLC, Burning Shores. I haven't played it because it was released. Was it during or just after the community relief event? So
yeah,
just after.
Earlier, yeah.
Right. So I instead went and played Witcher, which I've been promising Wolfie that I would play for about a year.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw some of the pictures online that you shared.
I enjoyed that a lot, I must say, but I do need to get back to Horizon and get some post-apocalyptic stuff going. I do really enjoy those games, I must say.
I mean, I think we can talk about the first Horizon game, because that also can provide an idea of what a Wasteland would feel like if you're playing an open-world RPG, kind of like Assassin's Creed.
But I have a question.
Yes?
Would you feel it like it's an Assassin's Creed?
Probably not, because I mean, unless like it would feel like an Assassin's Creed if you are going through the Wasteland and the story has you stop by through, you know, some like you can find different versions of or different instances of Animus machines that allow you to get through historical small stories that allow you to go on in the Wasteland. Like the Wasteland would be sort of like the new modern day. And like it would feel like an Assassin's Creed only if you go back in history. Because otherwise it could only be like one game. You do that in Wasteland or in the futuristic setting. And then that's it. Instead, if you have...
Go back to the historical section, which even now, even in the game, could be the future, and it would be more about what happened, what went wrong.
Exactly. That would be also interesting.
But can you imagine parkouring through ruined cities to find lost memory cubes or, you know, whatever? Almost like the you know how Aloy uses the focus to scan those little...
Yeah, pretty much. That would be amazing. It probably would feel very similar to Horizon.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that AC could lend itself to that. Like, in my opinion, Horizon is basically reverse AC. I always say that in our sense. Because Aloy is going around. There's you are in the wild, but there's a lot of technology around you. And you are digging the past, which is the same that we do in AC. And when you're looking for stuff about the old ones, which is, you know, us in the modern day or a little bit after that, it's the same as, you know, historical characters looking for first civilization artifacts. Because it's the same in a way. Aloy is looking for artifacts like... technologically advanced artifacts for her that are dating back to the past from a civilization that was more advanced than Eloy's civilization is. It's the same as the historical characters in the various AC games finding technological artifacts about a more advanced civilization that happened and died in the past. It's very similar. That's also why I love Horizon, because it's the kind of story that I enjoy, you know, digging about the past.
Yes. Yeah, the future history that you learn as you uncover little memory recordings and the hologram recordings. You know, you could really have some fun with that if your playable character was a sage.
And
therefore, as you played, you were uncovering your own memories, you know.
They could do anything with that. Like, if it's a sage in a wasteland or a futuristic environment, you could access memories from, you know, human history, first civilization history, or what led to the futuristic environment in the modern day.
Yes.
So within the same character, you could access everything.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go, Declan. We're done. We've got our pitch for the game.
I think... The one thing I wanted to add as well is, I mean, the thing that a future Assassin's Creed, like Horizon Zero Dawn, saying, could do better than a more cyberpunk dystopian one is you could really mirror the events of how the civilization had to band together during the first Turbo Catastrophe when the humans and the Isu split. So you could really create the story of Assassins and Templars have dropped the conflict. They've united to try and push forward to get things fixed. And then your character starts, you know, working maybe a secret division to try and find ways to make sure that the government doesn't fall apart and the whole civilization fries. And as you recover in memory streams or past logs of Assassins and Templars, you then start getting a warped view of the world, you know, where Assassins ride, where Templars ride. And you could always then end the game on civilization splitting again between two sides, or Assassin side and a Templar side, and creating a new cycle, as what's always been predicted in Assassin's Creed, that even if a solar flare hit and the whole world had to rebuild, civilization may always still divide between two sides who want complete order and who want complete freedom, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's super interesting as a concept as well. Like, it would be, you know, the ultimate attempt by the Templars and Assassins to make it work. And then eventually, as all those attempts happen, it would end probably badly, or like you could have the story like eventually, like you said, you split into halves, like the players that decided to support a more temporary view, and eventually after, yeah, like Zeri. So after you teamed up with the Assassins, you saved the world, and now as a Templar, you're going to go back to, you know, all the machinations, all the subterfuge in order to make the civilization go towards order and control. Or instead, I can't imagine, you know, be a part of a story where you team up with your enemy, but at the end, after the world is saved, like, after the world is saved, you go back to the old and show that this endless war, again, cannot end. Because even after the world is saved, now you can go back to bickering.
And I think you could also like mirror Cain and Abel as well, you know, that
yes,
the world has ended, and you could pretty much have it as two brothers in friendship, brothers in arms, whatever, you know. They've got the survivors, they're building a civilization, and one brother could see that, you know, civilization is failing because it's a little bit too more. There's like, so maybe some people aren't pulling the weight to get the right resources to survive. Maybe some people don't want to hunt, so they're not forced. And one brother could be like, you know, maybe we should push them a little harder, you know, they're slacking. And one brother could be like, well, if we push them too hard, they will rebel and they may not want to help. And then it creates that proverbial fiction that one brother then could start pushing workers more and more and more, and that could result in you beating him up, you know, imprisoning him, exiling him, or anything. And that leads to the idea of we've caused a split because we're left with the moral dilemma. Do we push our workers to get the right resources to survive, or do we let people get the resources in their own time in hope to build a trust? So it keeps the proverbial Cain and Abel story alive, but instead of artifacts, it removes all that for a basic nuance of human biology and nature. Do we fight for survival, or do we force people to fight for survival? And basically, I think that'll be the most Assassin's Creed story they could do, because Assassin's Creed has to be more than just shiny artifacts. It's the whole human nature as well, you know, as Haven in AFC3 says, you know, they survive because they don't need no creed, you know, they're universal, whereas Assassins argue that they need to survive because there needs to be a creed. So, and even Altair demands that the creed needs ironies because it's human nature. So I think if they were to go to a, like, Horizon Zero Dawn Wasteland, you would have to lean on human nature and the proverbial Cain and Abel build.
Which would be pretty interesting, in my opinion. Like, mirroring, like, this legendary battle between Cain and Abel, and having it as you are recreating this cycle happening, like with things happening all over and over again, and you are deciding which of the two brothers in arms you want to play, or like which kind of direction you want to bring the story towards. It'd be interesting, like, because you, the player, would be choosing. Are you again behaving like Cain, like the Templar ideology, or are you more like able or supporting the idea of freedom for the last remnants of humanity? It'd be very, very interesting.
That would be like the never-ending clash of humanity. I mean, there is always someone dictating the rules and someone else trying to rebel to the rules. So
yeah.
It's a never-ending clash.
And I think that's a clash that's evidenced in lore now, because I don't know if I'm correct in this because I've not done the comics. The Black Cross and was designed with Otzeburg, so anybody who rebels or pushes the line of the Templars is kept in line. So there's already that idea that a Templar organization built on order may be fractured, that there may be a split in that. And then if you take Pierre Bellec from Unity, you know, you already get that human nature split, that he would rather see Paris burn than have an alliance, because he believes in more freedom then complete control by a line of views. So AC has a huge core between moral philosophy splits between freedom and order, so having a huge wasteland story built on that would feel less like an Assassin's Creed in gameplay, but more in Assassin's Creed in a story. And I think
the philosophy
would be there. Yeah, and I think really Assassin's Creed shouldn't always lean on gameplay, but also an Assassin's Creed story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, even though usually games are built starting from gameplay and then you wrap the story around. So an initiative like that, I'm not sure they would have to sell it on some gameplay features and the setting maybe.
But
and
that was initiates.
That was, yeah, but it wasn't a game.
It wasn't a game, but like it was an online activity. See? Based on the story.
Oh yes.
And that's it.
See, it always happens. If the two of us are at within an episode of Let's Talk Assassin's Creed, we will definitely end up talking about initiates.
We did it last time.
Yes,
I do believe Marco and Sari, on your backlog, there may be a video about it one day.
Yes, you did mention. I did mention I would do that, and I never it is in my file wheel, the backlog of the stuff that I would like to do, and I never got the time to.
It's kind of funny because like here on this show, obviously we don't produce as many videos and do as many streams as you do, but every Mirage kind of news release, trailer release, Declan and I have had to quickly say, right, what were our plans? Okay, are we going to do some kind of episode about this trailer? Or, you know, so we're constantly moving stuff around in the last... This, I'm not complaining, by the way. Anyone listening, I am not being one of those gamers that's complaining, not at all. The Mirage content we've seen over the last few weeks has been great. I've been very happy to see it. But we have had to adjust our plans, and I'm sure, like you, you know, whatever plans you had for regular releases, looking back at the older games or whatever, you've had to adapt as well. So
we
live in good times, because hey, I'm very happy to see Mirage stuff. But yeah, I think we did have a really nice plan, Declan and I, for like May, June and July. Basically we're just winging it week by week now, because but yes, we must get back to some of those plans at some point. Anyway, sorry, I had to step away for a moment just to quickly chat to the family. But so I missed a bit of the conversation. But so I'd say, just say one thing, right? Although I've played a few of these post-apocalyptic games and I've enjoyed them very much, the whole subject is quite depressing. You know what I mean? About society is gone, humanity is hanging on by a thread or whatever. And I don't know, it would be quite a sad game, I think, or potentially a miserable game to play. But some people like that.
Yeah, hence why probably the part of the game within the, if we're talking about the wasteland scenario, the wasteland part would have, you know, similar like to the modern day that we're having in the main games currently. So like you're moving in the wasteland and then you find an access to the memories and then you spend hours in the historical memories. Then you, you know, spend a few minutes in the wasteland and then you go back for hours. Because otherwise I wouldn't see like a full game unless it's a wasteland where nature took control again. Because otherwise the environments would feel very sad and depressing throughout the entire map. So would be,
I mean, you can make it really, really meta, and that is a deliberate joke based on what I'm about to say. You could make it really meta, and you actually find an old VR headset that you get working. You put it on, you go and play. You know, anyway. sorry, Declan, mate.
Well, a little curveball I would throw in, because it's something I have touched upon in the podcast before, is when we talk about all these things, we have these envisions of the next AC game looking basically, no offense, but the generic type AC game we see, whereas a wasteland type story could be more best told in a Life is Strange type built game, or a Quantum Dreams type, a Detroit Become Human type game, you know, where it's a game that they could sell as a simulation story. So it's like, it's a side story. It's not directly connected to the main line, but as a simulation story, it would give the players more choice to build that post-apocalyptic world. You know, could they make those hard knock decisions? And at the very end of the game, you then get an outcome of, have you created the next world in the way of a Templar, or would you create the next world in the view of an assassin? And it's, I think sometimes with these type of stories, they may not work in a typical open world RPG or a linear one-to-one city, but they may work if Assassin's Creed was to use the Infinity Project and develop a new style of game just to tell these stories.
So you're thinking of, you know, the new Infinity platform would allow you to, you know,
like, yeah, it's like I've had this wild idea since Infinity was released that maybe for once Assassin's Creed can branch out to more exciting projects for the franchise. So do they want to tell a cyberpunk story in an open world RPG? Maybe not. Do they want to tell it in a smaller Mirage style gameplay? Maybe not as well. So why don't they create a newer experience and a smaller title built for that setting? You know, what if the world had ended and you had to make the choice between freedom and order? Do they want to tell that in a Mirage style game or RPG? Or should they create a comic book style game like Life is Strange, that's a choice-based game, or a Detroit Become Human where every choice matters? So I really think that Infinity has this possibility where these smaller stories may not need to be told in huge budget AAA RPGs or AAA linear games, but could be told in smaller dedicated titles built for them, like Life is Strange and stuff like that. I am slightly crazy with these all ideas, I won't lie.
Well, I think that, I'm not sure if it was confirmed or only rumored or, you know, through the leaks, but it was mentioned by some of, it was mentioned or rumored that the concept of the Infinity platform would allow, you know, smaller studios to spearhead their own smaller Assassin's Creed game. So this would also allow studios to create different experiences because they do not have to necessarily have, you know, multiple years in development to always create an open world RPG kind of game. Mm-hmm. Which also would alternate the different types of releases in order to not also get the formula repeated too frequently. I mean, for example, we might be seeing already something like that in a proto version right now, because like Mirage is a smaller scale kind of game. It's going to be an open world, but like within a main city and some wilderness around it. So I'm seeing a lot of positive comments about that. Like the few news about the size of the map, it's been all welcome by at least the comments that I've seen. So maybe I'm a little biased, but we'll see when that actually, when the game releases, and if fans take too short to complete the game, they might still complain. But at the same time, after spending, like if you're trying to be a completionist on games like Valhalla, that will take you a long time. There's a lot of fatigue with that. Yeah. So having different types of experiences could keep the franchise fresh for for standard gamers who just want to enjoy the new AC, knowing that it's not going to be only always a 300 hours marathon. Otherwise, you can't get to the end of the game. So I think that if it's going to be like that, it's going to be a smart move.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? I was thinking about this the other day. Haven't had a chance to even discuss this with you, Declan. This is continuing the point about Mirage. Games, at least on the console side now, are heading towards $70, £70, €70 as the new standard price. But we are getting, a full Assassin's Creed game for what, 40, 45?
Yes.
Honestly, I'm happy with that. I'm happy with a smaller game that costs less. I don't need a 200-hour game or even a 100-hour game. It's plenty, more than plenty. It's everything I've seen in terms of the gameplay trailers, the look of the game looks great. We've talked about parkour already, as have lots of other channels. There's probably no point going over that, but everything else looks pretty good, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to being able to finish it in a week or two, not like you said, Marco, not a month or two or longer.
I actually expect Codename Jade to last much longer than Mirage. If you are playing it, like if you get the time and potentially the smartphone or tablet to run the game, because I don't think it's going to run on every type of smartphone and tablet.
Yeah.
Potentially, because it does look to be based on Odyssey, and not just its gameplay, but the philosophy, like the development philosophy, it does seem like you see the environments. They are these huge maps. And like in the trailer, we see different shots of completely different maps. So it does feel like there are, it's more like they are biomes in a way, not yes. like Odyssey, yes. but almost. So biomes means huge open world maps, way more than it can be, districts in a city like Baghdad or Paris in Unity. So
I think also the objective of a mobile game is to keep you...
To keep you playing, yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
So
it's different from a console one.
Yeah, yeah. And also knowing that Mirage will not be a software as a service kind of game. Like, supposedly, there's not going to be a post-launch for the game.
That was something. So apart from the 40 Thieves story, there's going to be no... DLC, no expansion.
Yeah, no.
I wonder. I wonder if it's big, if it is successful. I wonder if they would, or maybe there are already too many teams already working on Red, Hexe, and all the rest of it. That
I mean, it depends on also like the other plans that they have for the other games they have already announced. So supposedly, Red will come out next year, so in 2024. There's already Codename Jade and Nexus, even though they are on wildly different platforms, meaning that not everybody is going to play all of them.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, because they are different platforms, if they see the Mirages that successful, they might do a DLC. But it seems like it's not their plan. So if they're going to change it, the DLC will release several months after the main release. So
The only reason I could think maybe to justify it maybe would be it would be an opportunity to sell more content to previous generation console owners.
Yeah.
Because I think it will be the last of the games for the previous generation, won't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably.
That might be one justification, but it's a very small one.
Yeah. Mm-mm. So yeah, I think that they will will just release the game and the unlockable mission, like the 40 Thieves quest. That's gonna be it.
Mm.
I really think they want to keep it contained.
Yes, it does look like they want to do that.
This is the story. This is the lore we're giving you.
Yeah,
and that's it. That's what we want to tell about Basim.
Yeah,
yes. And I suppose there's two books, isn't there, about him? Sorry, one book about him and one book about Roshan. I can't wait for the Roshan book. I'm really looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
And hey, we've actually got a lot of content in the transmedia about these characters,
also because imagine if there was a sequel DLC to Mirage, or well, depending on when Mirage is going to end in terms of Basim's story. We already have seen in the Golden City novel this story that seems a connection between Mirage and the events that are going to happen at the start of Valhalla and the Song of Glory comics. So there isn't that much.
Good point.
I do expect Mirage to end up on Basim turning into the Basim that we see from Valhalla.
Okay, so, that's your prediction, is it, for sort of the end of his story? Okay, gotcha.
My prediction for Mirage is that it might not show. I envisioned the ending, I did mention that in a few of our streams. The way I expect Mirage to end is at some point the internal struggle is too much. In the last chapter, it's mentioned that the struggle was intense but brief, and Basim and Loki's memories ended up on what he calls a mutual agreement. So I think that at some point the clash will turn, that will push the Basim that we see in Mirage, and eventually he's going to turn around and he will speak with Carlo Rota's voice. Saying something fascinating or something like that.
I love the way he says that. Yeah, yeah.
And
but I don't think it will be a tragedy like you think.
I don't think it will be a tragedy.
I mean, I think he, Basim, as we see it in the trailers, it's like a son of no one. I mean, he's alone.
Yes.
He's lost everyone, etc.
Yeah.
I think he will embrace the memories of Basim, because they give him someone to search, someone he loves to search for.
It's a different personality of his, because everything he had is lost.
Yeah. Could everything be. He has in his real life now, Basim the human being, is lost. He has no one else. He has, I have the hidden ones, but they're not my family. They're not my loved ones.
Okay.
So the memories of Loki comes up in his memory, so he remembers that he has this woman he loved, the children he had.
So he has a new purpose and motivation.
I don't know if it's going to be a tragedy, I surrender to you. It's more like I embrace what you're giving me.
I don't think, it might not be surrendering, because that's, I'm talking more about an internal struggle, but it could be, instead of, is it me or is it the other me? It could also be, like you said, it's interesting. I'm embracing this other life because the current one I'm leaving is empty, or like because we see that Basim will also clash with Roshan.
And that seems to be being pretty heavily hinted at, doesn't it?
Yes.
Different scenes and the side characters, the Nihal, is it? The lady potentially telling him to question this group. Although one thing we've got to keep in mind, and of course there could be enough gaps in the story that they don't need to, the writers don't need to neatly tie up all of the bows, but Basim is sent to Norway, you know, at the orders of the Hidden Ones. So although they've got concerns about him, he hasn't completely fallen out with the organization.
Yeah, exactly.
So I suppose he can fall out with Roshan, but not completely alienate himself with is it Mentor Rayhan and whoever else is running things. So they've got quite a tricky job, the writers, haven't they? You know, to create something interesting, create conflict, create story arcs, but not conflict with what we've seen in Valhalla's story.
I think, and in
the novels as well, you know.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because like what we see in the Golden City novel is that the Basim we see there is already the turned one. He is already looking for Odin's reincarnation to have his revenge, but he's still in his very early search phase. So I think that in Mirage we're gonna see when or how Basim turns into the first instance of what we see eventually in Valhalla. We might see how he meets Sigurd or not, because I think they met in Constantinople. So we might not see that as well.
That would be after the Golden City.
That would be way after the Golden City. So,
I don't think too much.
If they want to bridge the games, it would have to be, you know, a time skip into the future, probably. Or otherwise, the game might end on him turning.
I used to kind of really want to see those obvious connections, but as I've got a bit older and you know, played more different games and more different stories, I think actually I'm quite happy with some things just being left unsaid. You know, let fans come up with their own theories, or leave it to our imagination, or, you know, whatever, or future comics, you know, or novels or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind if we don't see any Raven Clan members in Mirage. But I've Declan, I realize the time, and we've got a little bit off topic, but also for our guests, where they are an hour ahead, it's even later. So we should probably close up the show and let everyone go to bed.
Bed sounds nice. I like bed.
Bed's warm. Just one question for you.
Mm.
We have talked about our opinion about the future, futuristic future or wasteland. So what is your favorite idea about that? I mean, would you prefer a futuristic future or a wasteland for an Assassin's Creed present day game?
Ooh, I would prefer the futuristic future.
Interesting.
Because the wasteland just makes me sad. And sorry, even though total control and subservience of humanity to Abstergo through their use of Apples of Eden terrifies me, at least the humans are alive and have some kind of, you know, society. And I mean, I would love a game purely set in that sort of setting. But the idea of a lone assassin, you know, maybe an assassin sage uncovering some memories of a previous time and says, actually, I'm taking these guys down, you know. I would love that. I think the Wasteland stuff, I mean, you know me, I love the Horizon games. I think they're amazing. But man, it's depressing. all that human history and knowledge and everything that's now gone. That's what I would vote for if I was given a choice. However, I know nothing about like good story writing or game design, so whether it would actually work as a story in a game, I have no idea.
neither do us. I mean, do we?
What about you, Declan? Pick one.
I would always pick Wasteland over Cyberpunk because I think Wasteland could tell a more philosophical story about the Creed, and I'm probably one of the rare few fans who is actually obsessed with the idea of everything being on a cycle, and I would really just love that, you know, the world to like burn through total catastrophe, civilization to come together, and then split up again on another cycle. That sounds exciting and something I would like to play. I wouldn't want to be like the one who causes the cycle, though. I don't play villains in games.
Who likes being? That's always the joke, isn't it? You know, people who play these RPG games, all this choice, and then most players generally try to be as nice as possible to the NPCs, and you know, you bump into someone in the crowd and you apologize and you pet all the cats because who wants to be nasty, really? You know, come on. All right, Declan, buddy, close the show.
So yes, so that is sadly all we've got time for, and I think, like all things Assassin's Creed, it's an interesting choice, Cyberpunk or Wasteland. But neither of these options are better than the other. They both can tell different stories, and I hope Assassin's Creed does find a way to explore them. Thank you to Marco and Zari for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It's always good to have access to Amazon. And if you guys want to join in the discussion, remember you can email us at assassinscreedletstalk@gmail.com, Twitter at @ACLetsTalk and at @JamesTillQuid. Or if you're feeling fancy, we do have a Discord server, which is always in the YouTube links. You can come pester us on there. And we'll see you all next week.
See you all soon.